Welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Human Resource Machine and The Last Door Season 2.
Absolutely. Nicholas, yes. Tell me what's cool about Human Resource Machine.
Sure. So Human Resource Machine is a game from Tomorrow Corporation, the people who did Little Inferno, and under a different name they did World of Goo before that. It is a programming puzzle game, and it was released on Windows, OS X, Linux, and Wii U, surprisingly. It's just a real fun kind of way of doing real simple programming in a very limited space. And the puzzles, I think, are a nice curve, and I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, it's so when we say a programming puzzle game, the other one we've done for the show is Infinifactory.
Right, and I did that kind of mini review of TIS 100 from the same guys who did Infinifactory. Yeah.
And Space Cam. So there's like one guy who does a lot of these.
Yeah, Zach Blarth of Zachtronics.
Yes. And this is the this other company kind of getting in on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, when I first loaded this up and kind of saw the aesthetics and realized it was from the Little Inferno people,
mm-hmm.
It's a strange game from them, because I didn't get far enough to really get into the story. I imagine there's a little bit of like pathos to this.
Just a little bit, yeah.
But it is so gamey, whereas like Little Inferno, there's not like a way to lose.
Right.
You know, like Little Inferno, it's an art game and there's a kind of a point to it. Not saying there's not a point to this. Just saying like the idea is, the point of Little Inferno is to express an idea. Human Resources Machine seems like similar to Infinifactory to me as a way to kind of break down this style of puzzle game.
Yeah.
To make it a little bit more accessible.
Yeah.
So it does have a much more gentle difficulty curve than Infinifactory, which is already kind of a fairly gentle difficulty curve.
Yeah, this definitely smooths that out even more. I think actually, like, mechanically, it's actually closer to TIS 100, which is interesting because TIS 100 is like the exact opposite direction. Like, it is purposely just convoluted and references back to really archaic programming. But this takes kind of that real low level and puts a really nice skin on it. Whereas Infinifactory, you're doing it in a completely different space with tools that do not like echo programming right off the bat, right? It doesn't like scream programming at you when you first start playing. But then as you get into what the puzzles are and how you have to manipulate all these objects in order to get your output, it becomes very obvious what kind of the base mechanics are. This puts programming right at the forefront, but makes it pretty and simple and kind of a lot cleaner. I think this is actually probably a really good tool for learning some of the basics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's pretty easy to pick up. I didn't get to spend tons and tons of time with it because these games are never going to be like, it's all varying degrees of like not totally my thing.
Absolutely. These are Nick games 100%. Yeah.
Like, it's not like I don't dislike it. I liked it. And I like this approach to puzzle design where it is about efficiency rather than a solution.
Yeah.
So I really like these puzzles that there are multiple ways to complete, and it is up to you to decide how rigorous you want to be or how well you want to do on it.
I think that's my favorite thing about this sort of style, too, is that because they're based in that, there's such a wide array of ways to solve any given problem.
Mm-hmm.
And this game builds in, which is, it's done on the Zachtronics games, too, but this game builds in kind of markers to try and meet, right? And typically for mostly solutions or most of these puzzles, there kind of is a perfect solution, like the way to do it the fastest and in the most number of cycles or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a large scope of ways to do it that aren't that perfect way, and it doesn't punish you for not doing things perfectly. It just wants you to get through the puzzle however you wish, and then if you want to challenge yourself to go back, revisit the puzzle, and create sort of a more optimized solution, that's completely your prerogative.
Yes. It reminds me, and this is kind of a weird point of comparison, but it reminds me of Guitar Hero, where I don't play Guitar Hero to get a good score. I just want to get to the end of the song.
Yeah.
And this, you can play this without trying to do that, without just getting to the end of the song. Figuring out how to set up these things to make it work is a game in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially what you're doing here is you have two conveyor belts, and you're moving functions between, or characters between them.
Yeah, little blocks, typically numbers, but in some of the later levels they become letters.
Yes. And you're given just kind of parameters, like we want certain things in the outbox, we don't want other things.
Right.
And then you're given these this kind of limited set of programmic tools.
Yeah,
to do that.
Simple stuff like jumping from one piece of the code to the other, or grabbing this from the input, or putting something out into the output.
Yes, and, then there's a little staging area where you can manipulate them, because a lot of them are math based.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting, like the way one of the relatively early ones, that the first one I thought was like even relatively challenging, was like, we only want things that equal zero. Mm-hmm. We only want numbers that are the same.
Yeah.
And there's no equal function. So you can't do like an if equal, then put this there. You have to try to subtract it from itself, see if the sum is equal, then go back to the first thing and put it in the outbox.
Exactly. And that's why it harkens back to TIS-100 to me, because this is very low level in that you don't have those kind of higher level functions of, you know, is this number versus this number equal? You can only kind of compare to a zero, or, you know, a one, or greater than zero, or less than zero. You have very rudimentary comparisons, and that's actually very similar to assembly programming, especially of the sort that TIS-100 tries to gamify.
Yes. And it just kind of gets you doing this little kind of math logic stuff to figure out how to get to this point. The interface is real clean and easy. You just kind of drag these functions over to your set of code over on the right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your little cuties in kind of a weird perspective.
Yeah.
Over on your left, kind of doing things, and you have a tape deck at the bottom for, you know, rewind, fast forward, stop, to kind of to kind of make the functions go through. And that's really it. It is, I think, if you're thinking about getting into these games, this is a really good one, because it is presented in a really attractive way and is very gentle.
Yeah.
You know, I got more levels into this than I did Infinifactory.
Yep.
And Infinifactory was pretty gentle because space is easier to think about than math for me. And I imagine Infinifactory is just kind of more complicated in general.
Yeah.
Just because you're actually dealing with 3D. But here it's like I feel, you know, I got like on the little ladder that is the entire game, 30 to 40% through it.
Yeah.
Just in a couple hours of playing, you know, with a couple like satisfying things, and then it got hard enough to where I ran out of time and had to stop. But it did ease me in. Like, I feel like I get it.
Yeah, it's very clean in how it progresses, and it has kind of these offshoot levels that are designed to be a little more challenging. Mm-hmm. I think there's three different offshoots, and they kind of take place in the ladder of levels, kind of where they're appropriate for what verb set you have. But then, you know, the most challenging level in the game is the top of the top most of these offshoots, not the, you know, the last level to complete the game, which is a pretty hard puzzle in itself. But then there's kind of a whole other set of challenges beyond that. Mm. So
how far did you get in it?
I beat every puzzle. Okay. I think it was probably 6 or so hours, over the course of a few days. You know, I dropped some, came back, but, you know, I didn't strive to go back and optimize anything. Some of the early solutions, I got a lot of the, you know, kind of optimal ones, just because I'm very familiar with the game format. But yeah, the harder levels, I was just like, can I even get this to complete? And I took a long time on that last puzzle, because it is a doozy. It's a prime factorization of input numbers. So you're given an input number, you need to put in the output only the prime factorizations of it, all the way down to each prime.
That's pretty intense.
Gets pretty intense. Yeah, you have a big like 5x5 grid of staging area in the middle, because you need it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll have to go on YouTube and watch somebody do that.
Yeah.
Pretty neat though. Like I like it. I like the I liked World of Goo, and I liked Little Inferno.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see this guy move in a very different direction, because like Little Inferno does not have a solution at all. World of Goo does not have set solutions. It's a really physics based thing. It's kind of the opposite of this. Like, it is about randomness,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, you know, this kind of set values.
Just kind of throwing stuff at a place until you get the right stack of things you need to bridge across whatever.
I can't think of another developer that has put out three games that are as different as these three games.
Absolutely.
Like, these are worlds apart, and they're all, the fact that they're all, like, pretty good is pretty astounding.
Yeah, and the art style is always cute.
Yeah, yeah, it is a cute aesthetic. And good music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dig it.
So as far as like story stuff, you didn't really miss out on much. Like, it's very light on the story. You know, there's kind of an overarching just feeling of corporate bullshit that is overarching everything. But then there's kind of at these little cutscene videos in the middle, there's this story of like robots invading Earth, but nobody in the building cares. Everybody just has to get their work done.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, you're finally free when they finally replace all the humans with computers.
So
that's pretty much all there is to it. But your character grows older through the game. I think you had a selection of like four different avatars or something at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the game, they're an old person.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like this idea of robots coming to Earth to make you do this thing that is essentially like logic.
Yeah.
Puzzles and calculations. Like that kind of makes sense. Yeah, good stuff.
So yeah, that's Human Resource Machine. Let's talk about Last Door Season 2.
Last Door Season 2. If you remember from last season of the show, we did the Last Door Season 1.
Mm-hmm.
These get released in episodes, but finally the Collector's Edition, all of them, came out March 29th of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is released by The Game Kitchen, who has an unfortunate icon that is a controller that's shaped like a sausage.
Yep.
On a fork.
I don't know why.
I'm not super into that.
No.
But this is a continuation and the actual wrap-up of that storyline. It is. I didn't actually think it was going to end everything, but this is the complete story that has started in The Last Door Season 1.
Yeah, and it is a Lovecraft-inspired point-and-click adventure game with a extremely low pixel graphic aesthetic, which mm-hmm. they do amazingly. I don't know how they managed to make a game so pretty with so little pixels.
I feel like if there's like a word for pixel art, like these guys should be up there.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is, but like this is so pretty. I took tons of screenshots, or just like with my phone because I wanted to share them on social media.
Yeah, I saw your Twitter easily.
Yeah, like I took tons of pictures of just like really cool sets and like really amazing stuff done with lighting. Just very, very warm when it needs to be, very cold when it needs to be, and really, really incredible kind of set piece stuff.
Yeah,
that happens in it. Like there are just some like really awesome moments that happen in this, and they managed to be spooky and scary with this level of fidelity and everything, and with kind of limited dialogue. At its heart, it is very much just a classic point and click
yes.
adventure game.
The sound design in it is actually astounding as well.
Yeah, that's like, really good too. Yeah,
you know, they don't limit themselves quite as much as they do graphically, but they definitely play into kind of the sound design and music really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
The Last Door Season 2 story-wise, which we'll do a spoiler section where we kind of wrap everything up, because I actually did manage to beat it last night.
Oh, okay,
so,
cool.
So we'll talk a little bit about the endings and opinions on the story-based stuff. But to start you off, this picks up where the last one left off to an extent, where you are taking over as Dr. John Wakefield, who was Devitt's psychiatrist, Devitt being the main character of the first season.
Yes.
And he is troubled by the disappearance of his client and travels to meet one of his colleagues, Dr. Johan Kaufman, to mm-hmm. Kind of research what happened to Devitt.
Yes. And this is you kind of digging into that. And a lot of the things that are hinted at in the first season are kind of explicitly explored here.
Yes.
And explained. It's set up in four episodes. The episodes, unlike the first season, feel more different from
yeah.
one another. Episode 2 and 4 specifically are very different.
Yes, they are.
Than any of the other episodes. And not even of a piece. Like 2 is not like 4. It is just 4 is very different, 2 is very different.
Yeah.
You're kind of in some new areas that we haven't been in before either. Whereas the first season, if I recall, it's been a while since I played it, but every episode kind of really revolved around one interior location
mm-hmm.
usually. And this one starts off like that, and then kind of moves around. Like you have an overworld map that is more important.
Yeah.
In these levels.
And I liked how they did that, especially in the first and third episodes with you kind of having to jump back and forth between, this world map and these different set pieces, on there to complete kind of the puzzles involved. Like there's a lot of backtracking in a pretty decent way that is a pretty traditional but well done adventure game.
So. They make it easy. You can double click on the edge of a screen to fast travel once you've done it once.
Yeah, that's great.
You can zip around very quickly.
Important,
like,
yeah.
And the episodes are bite-sized. Like it has that telltale thing where you can sit down, like buy this game and set out to play it over the course of a week and then sit down and play an episode like a movie.
Yeah, it's like an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yep.
I think episode 2 probably was the longest of them.
Mm-hmm.
That one probably came in closer to 2 hours, but the rest are much closer to hour and a half.
Yeah, let me look and see what my total. So my total play clock was 8 hours.
Yep.
So sounds yeah,
it just is, about right.
Yep. Yeah, and yeah. So the what's kind of neat about it is a really kind of strong implementation of a bunch of kind of like you put a bunch of Lovecraft shit in a blender.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of like little things that it picks up on, but it just does a really good job with mood. And stuff like it is, I think these two games kind of together, it's not perfect. Cause we'll talk about some of that stuff in just a second, but these two games together are like up there with great Lovecrafty games.
Yeah.
Like up there with, Dark Corners of the Earth and, Bloodborne and, these kind of like really, really amazing Lovecraftian games.
Yeah.
These are up there, I think.
And it's worth noting that, although, you know, it's all public domain, this doesn't actually make any explicit calls to any Lovecraft pieces.
Mm.
But it comes very close.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It more or less files the serial numbers off a couple things.
Yeah.
It's also so talking about the kind of the downsides to it, because it's not perfect. So this is it's crowdfunded. It's made by a very small team, all understandable, and they do really amazing work presentation wise. There's a mild kind of like the two things that made me a little bit irritated throughout it is there's a real mild lack of polish where there are a couple things where I would get an obvious piece of code.
Yep.
Like I would click on something and be like, you know, inspect element, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
like
I got a bunch of those too.
I didn't get a bunch. I maybe got like three or four throughout the whole game.
That's probably about the count. Were you playing the collector's edition on Steam?
Yes.
I think it might be something particular to that. I think when they compiled it together for the collector's edition, they might have missed some stuff.
Yeah, they broke some stuff.
Which, you know, that is the most recent kind of revision of the game. So it would make sense that when they were compiling that, they might have introduced a couple bugs.
Yeah, it's the one I want to do, though, because you can buy them individually. But I think the first episode is always free.
Yeah,
I want to give these guys money for it, you know, so I'm like, I'm happy to buy them. It's just kind of a shame about that, because it really does. Ordinarily, I don't complain about bugs and glitches. But this is so like I'm atmospheric that it like does kind of take you out a little bit. And then some of the puzzle design, this game is actually like a kind of a bad offender at the arbitrary triggers in the world.
Yeah.
Where like you do something, it causes something else in the world to trigger, but there's no connection between those two things.
That happens. And there's a couple that I had to kind of look up references to as well, just because kind of the element that you were supposed to maybe see or interact with is not obvious.
Yes.
And it's not quite pixel hunting, despite how big the pixels are here. You know, it's not Kingsfield bad, but there's like, I think you and I explicitly talked about one in the first episode where it kind of expected you to step on a tile that you never need to, because you can kind of just click everywhere.
You move around with your mouse,
right?
Like the way that you check and see if something is unusual is hovering your mouse. You don't actually bring your avatar over there.
Yeah.
But this one, if you hover over it, nothing happens. You actually have to bring your avatar there.
Exactly.
Yeah. I find that difficult.
Me too.
As well.
There is, you know, I think there's only a few places that I had to actually look up stuff, but there were more than a few times that I kind of had to find out what triggered due to my actions.
And sometimes there are hints where it's like, you know, you'll hear a noise off to one side of the screen, but sometimes no. Like sometimes you just do something, and when that happens, you go to another area and something is different.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff is classic, kind of poor puzzle design.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's when people talk about bad puzzles, that's what they're talking about, is a lack of feedback and something feeling arbitrary. And like this game I really like does that a lot. So you kind of have to just be up for it. Like they do their best to make it easy to backtrack and get around that stuff, but every once in a while you'll do something and then just have to kind of explore every area you've been to see what changed.
Absolutely.
Because some door opened up randomly, you know, and that kind of bums me out. The good stuff is all stuff that we should talk about in spoilers. So there is a lot of good stuff and a lot of really great kind of scenes and ideas and stuff, but it's all spoiler content. So if you like adventure games, you like Lovecraftian stuff, like I think you should play it. And it is also very beautiful.
Yeah.
You should play it for that reason as well.
And like we said, this is season two. The first season, was, I think, probably even better, kind of all around polished.
I think so too. It just doesn't complete the story.
Yeah.
So, which is, you know, why it ends up being not quite as it's not a standalone thing.
Exactly. So I think that combined these two make a pretty damn good game together. So,
oh yeah.
So definitely worth checking out.
The first season two, kind of looking at comparisons now, is also, the visual polish is not quite on par either. like the first season looks more crude than the season does.
That very well could be. Yeah, it's been a while. So, but
yeah, I mean, I didn't remember either. I just looked at them next to each other. So it's but and you, this one won't make sense without the second one, really.
Yeah.
So like you would want to play them both.
Yeah.
If you want to play them at all.
Yeah, second one won't make sense without the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about some spoilers here in just a second.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you like this show, before we get into spoilers, you can support it by going to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can also rate and review us on iTunes, send us tweets, things like that. That is very appreciated.
Yep. And you can always come interact with us on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or on twitter.com@comradepodcast. Or if you're a Patreon contributor and you haven't come hung out in the Comrade Slack channel, please do. There's a lot of good conversation that happens in there, especially when some great game comes up on the show and people just want to rate off about it for a while, like Momodora has been doing recently.
Yeah, which is great. Go Momodora. I think that's probably about it. We really appreciate all those things.
Absolutely.
Here, brief musical sting, and then we'll talk about some Last Door spoilers. All right. Yeah, I'm glad you beat it, because I didn't want to have to tell you the end.
Yeah, then I want to talk about it too, because I feel like the ending did some. The last episode, I think, kind of is separated out from everything else for me. I wasn't really a big fan of the last episode.
I liked the last episode. I liked episode 3 and 4 the best, I think. So let's we don't have to summarize them, but let's just kind of talk about why that is. You start out the first episode, you are investigating, mostly a mansion, but these areas around town. It's very similar to Last Door season one. Mm-hmm. Episode 2 is very explicitly like riddle based.
Yeah.
And riddles, it's all and puzzles.
One location primarily.
Yes. You move around just a little bit, but it's almost entirely one location. Mm-hmm. And it is, it's explicitly like, hey, there's a riddle in a book and you have to kind of solve it.
Yeah.
There's some really cool puzzles there, but it felt like much more, like less narrative focused.
Yeah.
To me, it felt a little bit like stalling for time. I love the puzzle with the globe and where you're following the directions on the map.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
That one is really cool. I like that one a lot.
Yeah. But things get like really exciting and awesome in episode 3.
I think episode 3 is probably my favorite. I like it a lot. I liked the setting of it. I think it had a real good Lovecraftian feel. I liked I think all of the puzzles. I don't think I had to look anything up in 3.
No, 3 is really fair.
Yeah.
3 is really good and does some cool interface shit. So on 3, you are on an island that has this this old cult, this old ritual, mm-hmm. that it follows, that the person you're looking into at the time thought the answer would be here.
Right.
And you're just kind of like dealing with these natives who have this these old rituals that they follow about this creature that lives in a pit. And they do all these crazy, like really cool detailed things. Like they wear these masks. And when they put on these masks, they take a mirror and they bury it, because the mirror is the one that knows what they really are.
Yeah. It's the mirror that they were were looking into when they were changing into their mask. They have to destroy, or they have to bury, because, it was the last one.
It knows the truth.
Yeah. It knows who's behind that mask.
Super cool details. That's like really that. Good. And then I love the puzzle with when you start the lighthouse and the pattern that appears in the wall and the light.
Yeah, that's good.
Because it's like a weird interface thing where you have to click only when the light is on it. Because mm-hmm. adventure game usually don't do that.
Right.
This kind of timing based thing that you have to kind of figure out. And then that entire ending, once you go down there, like the final stretch of that, of walking through the fog,
is really good.
With the masks and then the eyeballs on the wall that open up. Like, it's really, really good.
It is really good.
I love the ending of that. And the reason why 4 is so different is because that is you going past this curtain, or past this veil.
Into the veil, yeah.
Yeah, because in the 4th episode, you are operating on explicitly dream logic, because you are in, Relier, essentially.
Yep, definitely some dreamlandsy stuff in the 4th episode. My complaint about it, the 4th episode, which makes it really easy for us to go through, is that it seems explicitly way more linear than any of the other episodes previous to it.
Yeah.
There's no like jumping around or anything, and it's kind of all sectioned off into these three explicit sessions before you get to the end.
Well, there are areas that recall the other areas you've been through.
That's true.
Through that, so you go into these little areas that are like mirrored kind of nightmare versions of areas you've been in the previous three episodes.
That's true. But it also has way less sort of puzzly stuff. It's kind of just getting into these areas and then finding shadows and then peering into them and getting the story. Mm-hmm. So it kind of feels like a rush to kind of wrap everything up.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. It didn't feel like a rush to me. It felt like, you know, it's like too late for puzzles. You know, like it's you made it. Now you're just going to see some weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the weird shit is totally on point in four.
Oh, it's very good. Yeah. No, I like all of the graphic and set design stuff. But that's not in any way a complaint of mine. I really liked all that.
Four, I think, works a lot better if you think of it as like a really extended cutscene.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
That's pretty much what it feels like. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of really minor puzzles and you do have to do things in a certain order, but it's pretty low gameplay.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. At that point, like I also was, you know, finishing it last night and was probably all right, ready for it to be over, you know? So, I mean, like I was also okay with moving forward because of that. Like I wanted to see the end. I wanted to see the weird shit. And we end up learning about these four kids who, found this way to peer behind the veil and everything. And we kind of learn their story.
Yep.
They found a way to do it without enraging this guardian, which is this gigantic bird.
Mm-hmm.
And your student tried to do this, failed, kind of became amnesiac, and then is trying again. And you have the choice of sacrificing yourself or letting him sacrifice himself.
Right, which that all is sort of the in-between between season one and season two. Because in season one, you were essentially playing Devitt right after he woke up from amnesia.
Yes.
From the events that happened the first time they attempted to get through the veil.
Yes.
And then since then he's gone on to, by the end of the first season, he's gone back and he's sort of gone to the last door, as the reference says. It's that, like, getting past this final stage that is typically protected by this guardian.
Yes. Yeah. So it's pretty neat the way that kind of comes together, and you get this, this ending that did you go into the curtain?
I did.
Yeah. I had to look up the, don't go into the curtain ending, because the curtain starts closing and you have a limited amount of time to click on it. And then you're just choosing between two endings.
And the two endings are essentially the same, just with who survives and who doesn't.
Yeah. If you don't go, it's a little bit darker.
Yeah.
Is the idea. You get this implication that you're still being kind of hounded by this guardian if you don't go, because you like come out with a feather and then there's like birds are squawking, which always happens because you're scared of birds now. But there's a more explicit bird kind of presence. Like you get this implication that maybe you haven't escaped the notice of this thing.
Yeah.
There. But just so many like really good kind of monster design stuff in three and four.
Yeah.
Like the child's playhouse thing.
That's so good. Oh, it's so creepy.
Where you can't, because the thing is, and like you share the space with it, which never happens. The way in these games, when you get confronted with the monster, it usually shows it for a second and then the episode ends.
Yeah, you lose control at that point.
And then you wake up in the next episode, you don't know how you got away from it.
Right.
But this one, it's like right there and you just can't approach it. You can't get close enough to it, but it just kind of moves in the shadows.
Yeah.
Super good.
That is really good.
And then like the Dreamland stuff, like the lady with the cloak where you click on it and the cloak kind of unzips vertically. Like that's real good too. It becomes that tree kind of thing.
All the zoomed in stuff, like the full screen images are all really good. There's the one in episode three too, when you're peering through the,
the tomb. Yeah, that's really good. Just really spooky and gives you the sense of like real intense dread to actually go forward and get close to manipulate this thing, even though this game does not have a fail state. And doing that, like in a game where you literally cannot die, making you not want to go forward is really, really kind of a feat.
Yeah.
So pretty impressive. I was into it. I'm glad I played it.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff. I'd be interested to see what this team does. I'm glad this story is over. Because it got a little like, I think they got a little mythology heavy. I think that between the two episodes, keeping track of every, New England sounding name gets kind of exhausting.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't have any of the names of the places.
Yeah, I would really like them to. I'd be curious to see what they do if they switch to something else or try to do something different.
Yeah, if they do more adventure games, like give me more stuff in the vein of episode three. Like,
yeah,
that was such a solid, well-rounded episode of a game.
I love the way they structure these, where you do a little prologue before the credits, where you are oftentimes playing a character that is at odds with the character you actually play.
Mm-hmm.
Like that first one that starts with you boarding up the house, and then that episode ends with you finding her boarded up in the house.
That's really great.
And then the birds come. Like, it's really good. I like that, the way they're like really cinematically structured.
Yeah, these guys are really good at that.
Yeah. Super, super good work. And I don't feel like they get a lot of attention. Like, I don't hear a lot of people talk about these guys, and I'd like to see that, you know, see more of that. So,
yeah, at least they have a quality Wikipedia page. You know, they're doing at least semi well if
Wikipedia has taken notice of them, for sure.
Yeah. Apparently, GameSpot and IGN have both reviewed them and gave them pretty good scores, a 7 and 8.5 out of 10. And they have a 79 out of 100 on Metacritic. So,
good job, guys.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. I'll be curious to see what they do next. So,
absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks. Catch you next time.
Bye.